Don't Move a Muscle, the podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I'm your host, Cassie.
And I'm Joe.
And we're here to do Chapter 11 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, The Firebolt. Three guesses on what this chapter is about.
Well, I mean, a good chunk of the chapter is just not about the firebolt.
Right. It's just like when the Nimbus 2000 is destroyed in a previous chapter, it's like, gee, I wonder what broom Harry's going to have next. Oh, let me just look at the chapter index. And there's a chapter called The Firebolt. I don't know. Maybe I was just a nerd kid who would go through the chapter titles before I read the book and be like, I know what's going to happen then.
Yeah. And also, like, they spent a good chunk of time in the beginning of this book introducing the fireball.
Right, yeah.
For it to just never show up again would be a little
Yeah, it's a silly. Chekhov's gun situation, so it is what it is. All right, so we are going to start with the chapter summary, which it is Joe's turn to do this week. And for those who don't know, we try to do a chapter summary in 30 seconds or less. So I'm going to grab my phone to use the timer, and Joe will start when he's ready.
Harry is angry about Black being his dad's friend and the reason his parents are dead. Ron and Hermione are worried he'll put himself in danger. They visit Hagrid, who is upset that Buckbeak is on trial and may be put down. Harry gets a firebolt for Christmas that has no note or card. Hermione is worried it might be from Sirius Black and tells McGonagall, who takes it away to check for jinxes.
All right. That was about 19 and a half seconds. That's pretty good. You're coming in well under.
It was I don't know if it was a short chapter, but like,
I feel like the chapters are getting longer.
Yeah. I feel like that covered pretty much all of it.
It was a very internal chapter. It's a lot about like what's going on in Harry's head, not necessarily like big plot events.
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll dig into that. So Harry, as Joe suggested in his chapter summary, is all aggro after the news of the last chapter. And there's a quote that I specifically pulled out. A hatred such as he had never known before was coursing through Harry like poison. Which is kind of wild because, like, Harry has come face to face with Voldemort before, but this is, like, the tippity top of, like, angriest Harry has ever been.
I mean, it's one thing to just be evil, but betrayal?
Yeah.
Unacceptable.
Yeah, I would so much rather have somebody murder me than betray me.
The problem was it was betrayal and murder.
Right, and it feels personal in a way. And I feel like this is also the first we really see of Harry's temper, which grows more substantial as the books go on, kind of coming to a point in book five. But this is the first time Harry is like truly and legitimately pissed off.
Yeah, and justifiably so.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the stuff he is dealing with is difficult, and I do not blame him for being upset and angry. I do think that there are better ways to handle his anger than what we see in the chapter. Like, for example, stewing over pictures of your parents at their wedding with Sirius Black standing there smiling, maybe not a healthy thing to do.
I mean, that was an interesting scene because, like, he does just look at it and then put it away right away. And then, like, because he went out of his way to look at it, he now has a face to like picture in his head.
Yeah.
Every time he closes his eyes.
Right, I guess. And we'll certainly talk about that. Harry has nightmares about what went down because, like Joe said, he has a face for it. And
now, before we get too far, I do want to talk about the very first line of this chapter.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Harry didn't have a clear idea of how he had managed to get back into the Honeyduke cellar through the tunnel and into the castle once more. And that is set up as like he was so angry. He just like stormed through there. It was no problem. But I would genuinely like to know, was this so that J.K. Rowling didn't have to explain how he snuck back into the cellar that he had trouble getting out of?
Right. Not only because like he had trouble getting out of the cellar, but it pops him out like behind the counter.
Yeah, he has to sneak place. Behind the counter of Honeydukes and then into the cellar.
Yeah.
And then walk for like an hour.
Yeah. It's a really convenient way of just like getting him back to Hogwarts quickly.
Yeah. He's back because he was angry.
Yeah. But I mean, it's believable. I mean, this isn't necessarily a good comparison, but like there are mornings when I'm like really tired. This hasn't happened in a long time, actually. But there are mornings when I'm like really tired and like you drive to work and like you get there and you're like, I have no memory of that drive.
No, I fully get the feeling. It's just, it's very convenient she made that be how he gets through this theoretically difficult task.
Yeah. So Harry is all mad. He dodges pretty much everybody that night, just kind of goes to bed and stews over that picture.
Yeah, he pretends to be asleep so that Ron can't talk to him.
Yeah.
Ron is nice and tries to, like, comfort him and find him, but lets him sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Harry has nightmares, as I was saying before Joe so rudely interrupted me with his thoughtful comment about the beginning of the chapter. Harry has nightmares about what happened between Black and his parents and Peter Pettigrew. And I thought this was interesting. He imagines Peter Pettigrew to look like Neville, which I think is totally fair, given what McGonagall said about Peter Pettigrew. I think that she could have said very similar things about Neville, about like, yeah, not the brightest kid. Mm-hmm. Never really found his niche, found something he was good at.
Yeah, I mean, Longbottom is very much like, he's not very skilled, but like he does do a bunch of stuff with Harry and Ron and Hermione.
Just kind of following them around, doesn't really have a place, doesn't really.
But I think the biggest part is when Neville ends up in those situations, it's rarely by his choice. Meanwhile, it seems like Pettigrew actively just like, follow them around as much as he could.
Yeah. Neville just like doesn't have any other friends, unfortunately. Which, I don't know, maybe that was the case for Peter as well.
I don't, but we don't know that him and Ginny aren't hanging out right now.
That's true. That's true. They do have a friendship that blossoms that I think is very good.
Yeah.
They're like in that tertiary group of like the reject friends of Harry. There's the inner circle of like Harry, Ron, and Hermione. And then there are the people kind of on the periphery that are like,
yeah, those are the B characters.
Yeah, and we get some good additions to that B character team. But right now, Ginny and Neville are taking up that spot. Mm-hmm. They're sitting on the bench. So in this comparison, if Neville is Peter Pettigrew, does that make Ron Sirius Black? Like, if we follow it as a one-to-one comparison, obviously Harry is James' best friend, Ron. Do we now have to worry about Ron? Is he going to murder Harry?
I don't know. I mean, like, for a lot of reasons, that falls flat.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But, I don't think Harry is thinking that far into it. He's just saying, like, oh, this poor Neville-like character that was obliterated. I have to find this because it was very interesting to find out that, like, Pettigrew's mom was sent.
Yeah.
His finger.
Let's set the stage for that a little bit.
Okay.
So Harry has trouble falling asleep. He has these nightmares. Eventually he gets up and it's like almost lunchtime.
We already did the chapter summary.
Okay. Okay. I'm setting the stage here. He goes down to the common room where Ron and Hermione are waiting for him and everybody else has left for Christmas break.
Yes. There are very few people. In fact, a total of 13 people are still around.
Well, 14, because one doesn't come to dinner, but we'll talk about that later. So Harry finds Ron and Hermione sitting there, and Ron and Hermione have like prepared a little speech to give to Harry to like talk him down.
Which is the same thing he's been told so many times this book of like, please don't go after Sirius Black. And like now that he knows why everyone was telling him that, he's so much more angry and so much more willing to do exactly what everyone knew he was going to do if he found out.
That's the funny thing. Like,
he's
this whole
angry
time.
Nobody told him. Yeah. And then now that he knows, he's doing exactly what they were worried he would do.
Yeah. And
so
this
it's
whole
fully
time,
justified that they would avoid it.
Whenever somebody said this to him, he's like, why would I go after a killer? Like, why would I do that? I'm just like a 13-year-old kid. And now suddenly he knows why they were so anxious. And now he's like, I want to kill him. It's like everybody knows you, Harry. Like everybody knows how you're going to react.
The sheer like malice in all his thoughts of, oh, he doesn't want him to go back to Azkaban. He knows that they don't affect Sirius Black.
The Dementors.
The Dementors don't affect Sirius Black at Azkaban as strongly as it does other people. So like he's not normal.
He needs some punishment.
He needs real punishment because the Dementors in Azkaban are not enough punishment.
Yeah. And so that's when the thing about Peter Pettigrew gets brought up. Ron says, like, you cannot go after Sirius Black. My dad told me what Peter Pettigrew's mother received after Peter was killed. And it was Order of Merlin First Class for Peter and his finger in a box.
Yeah.
Why would you give that
to a mother?
I have absolutely no idea. Like, I know I've read about, unfortunately, I'm one of those people that falls down those like true crime rabbit holes every now and then on like Reddit, where I read like these unresolved mystery cases and like all this stuff. And like there have definitely been times when a parent will like request like the clothes that they were wearing, if that's possible. You know, like something to remember them by.
But and you don't want, like, this seems like if Sirius Black was angry, he would send that finger in a box.
Okay,
versus
yeah.
like, this is a condolence finger in a box.
Yeah, I would not want that. I would not want to receive that.
Yeah.
Like, and the, and I think that the suggestion is that's all that's left. You know, she can't
get Yeah, that was the biggest piece of him.
Yeah, she can't get the t-shirt he was wearing that day because it's been blown to smithereens. But, like, I don't want a... And, like, what do you do with that? Where do you keep that?
You don't. Like, you know, just, like, burn that for her and give her the ashes.
Yeah, I would so much rather have the ashes. Ugh. Yeah. Ick.
Yeah.
It's an important detail, though.
And while they are warning him, Harry is fully ignoring them and just being like, Malfoy knew. Malfoy knew the whole time. Malfoy's dad is in the inner circle with Voldemort, and he knew what Sirius Black did. And
which I think we have to kind of put a pin in for a future chapter, because this raises a lot of questions.
We'll come back to it.
Yeah. I do think it is important what he's pointing out here, that like Lucius has this information through nefarious means and Draco has been using it to taunt him, and just kind of that feeling that Harry has of everybody knows more than me and they refuse to tell me. Like, it shouldn't have been Malfoy that gives him the first suggestion that there was some kind of connection between Sirius Black and his parents' death. But like, I get it. I get why Harry's upset. I don't like to have information withheld from me. I would be frustrated, too, if everybody was lying to me just because, like, oh, they know best and they know what to do best. And I understand that this is upsetting information that nobody wanted to deliver to Harry. And of course, it opens a question of, like, who should have given this information to Harry?
And theoretically, he got this information from all the people that possibly could have given it to him. There was no person that could have told him this and he would have been okay with it.
But I think that there would be something to be said for somebody who could tell him this and like talk him through it, because Ron and Hermione come into this conversation very defensive. They're very much like, Harry, we need to know that you're not going to go after Sirius Black. Like, we need you to understand how powerful he is and how that will not end well for you. And I think that their point is absolutely valid. But I think in this moment, Harry needs somebody just to, like, listen to him and, like, not feed his anger, but, like, let him vent his anger. And I don't think that's fair of me to expect from Ron and Hermione, because they're 13. I don't think that they have the emotional intelligence to see that that's what Harry needs in this moment.
But I don't think Harry has that either. No. I don't think Harry realizes he just needs to vent.
No, but like if an adult had sat down with Harry and said like, hey, I have some difficult information and it's a lot to handle, but I think that you need to know it. And created a space that was safe for him to express his emotions and encouraged him to express those emotions. I think that that's what he needs in this moment. And the other part, I think, that prevents Ron and Hermione from doing this is that they don't really have any experience to draw from. Like, if Harry says, it's difficult knowing that my parents' best friend betrayed them and led to their murder. Like, if Ron said, like, yeah, I know, I understand, Harry. It's kind of like, well, you don't understand. You've never had to deal with anything this big, you know, like we have never heard of Ron and Hermione having to deal with the loss of someone, and especially not the loss of someone under these circumstances.
Yeah.
I think Harry needs somebody who is compassionate and who can empathize with him.
And I think that Hagrid would have been that person if he was allowed to.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know if Hagrid, like, we heard that conversation in the Three Broomsticks.
I think Hagrid's mad, too.
Hagrid has not, like, fully grasped this, and he is very upset about it, too.
Right, but I think Hagrid could have been that person
He was explicitly told not to.
Right, but I think that he is one of the people who has, first of all, like, that close of a relationship with Harry and a relationship of comfort.
Yeah.
That, you know, like Professor McGonagall could have told him this stuff, but Professor McGonagall is not a comforting figure to Harry.
Professor McGonagall would have done her best with the aftermath.
But I think she would have taken a similar approach to Ron and Hermione of like lecturing rather than listening.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not saying that because I think that Ron and Hermione and McGonagall would be coming from the right place with that, because ultimately they're just concerned with Harry's safety and well-being. But again, it's a question of like, what do you need in that moment? It's like something that I read about with like having conversations like this and dealing with people that are in emotional places, that like some people want you to listen to their problems and like suggest a solution. And other people just want to be heard. They just want to vent. And I think that Harry just needs to vent in this moment. You know, I think he needs to take out that anger somehow in a healthy way.
Yeah. Who knows if that would have been enough, though?
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to see some of that soon, but not in this chapter.
No. In a way of, again, trying to distract Harry and divert him, Ron says, let's just go to Hagrid's. Let's go to Hagrid's. And Harry's like, yeah, I'm going to yell at Hagrid.
I don't know why Ron would have, like, I understand where Ron was coming from, but like, Ron, Hagrid is one of the people that knew and didn't tell Harry.
But Hagrid's like, Hagrid is an adult they haven't really seen in a while. Hagrid's somewhere that they would regularly visit and haven't been able to. And this is like, oh, it's, you know, it's break. We can finally go visit Hagrid and actually Hermione, hang out with him.
Hermione, to her credit, is like, well, maybe we shouldn't leave the castle. And Harry's like, no, let's go see Hagrid.
Yeah, she knows that last time they went and visited Hagrid, Hagrid said you shouldn't.
Yeah.
Come visit.
I think she's also she realizes why Harry wants to see Hagrid and that it's not for the right reasons. But like, there's no chance Harry would have listened to her in that moment. If he's like on the edge of like, I want to find and kill Sirius Black, he's going to be like, yeah, I'm walking to Hagrid's. I hope I find Sirius Black along the way.
So they get to Hagrid's and Hagrid is not answering the door.
No.
They're hearing like a murmuring. They're like, oh, is that Fang? What's happening? Mm-hmm. Should we get some help? Harry just bangs on the door louder and yells, Hagrid, Hagrid, like he is still ready. But then Hagrid opens the door, so upset. He's crying over the letter he's just received, letting them know that he has been acquitted from all responsibilities.
But just kind of like the first part of the letter says, we've, you know, analyzed the situation when we except that you're not responsible for what happened. And that is good. I think Hagrid is partly responsible for what happened, but sure.
And then the second half of the letter is that Hagrid is going to take the hippogriff Buckbeak to London. They're going to go to London together.
They're going to go before the committee
trial.
The Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures. How is Hagrid going to discreetly bring a hippogriff to London?
I don't see a good way.
What a stupid request. Like, just go there. Just go and see the hippogriff. Because the other thing, too, is if this is a dangerous hippogriff, like not even making an argument about size and transportation, if this is a dangerous hippogriff, do you really want Hagrid walking down the dang street with it? They say, like, hey, you should keep it chained up for now until we get to see it in April. Just go to Hogwarts and see it.
Yeah. But they don't want to put that effort in.
Oh, my God.
They want to sit behind their desks and kill interesting creatures.
Yeah, that's what Hagrid is worried about. Interesting creatures.
And by the way, Committee for Disposal of Dangerous Creatures is like, in no situation are they going to be trying to protect. Like, their job is to dispose of
this
dangerous
creatures. This is framed
creatures.
As like, we're going to take a look. We're going to talk about the situation. There's going to be a trial. It's called the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures. It's not the, like, committee for, like, investigating animals or something. It's disposal. You know what their intention is.
Yes.
Hagrid is not going home with that hippogriff.
And Hagrid knows that that whole committee is also in Lucius's pocket.
Right. So the assumption here is that Lucius is like really pushing for that hippogriff to be killed. I think it's weird that Lucius either didn't have the influence to make this happen or back down on this. But like, I would have thought that Lucius would be gunning for Hagrid's job.
Well, that's the start of this letter, is that Dumbledore stepped in
made
sure that that wasn't happening at
all.
So he certainly was gunning for his job, but he went for, well, I'm going to make him suffer somehow.
Is this a thing? Like, if I was walking down the street and I got bit by a dog, couldn't that dog be put down if you like really pushed for it? I believe that can happen. I feel like I've heard stuff about that. Yeah. I would not do that, for the record. I mean, unless it seemed like the dog had like rabies or something and I got rabies.
Well, maybe then it's out of everyone's hands. If your dog has rabies, I'm sorry.
Yeah. But this does seem like it has some basis in reality, that like if a dog bites you and you want to be a real jerk about it, if you're a real Lucius Malfoy, you can push for that dog to be put down, or that hippogriff, as it were.
Yeah. And then they notice that Buckbeak is just in the house with Hagrid.
Eating like something bloody.
Yeah. And the argument there was like, not that he was going to freeze or he was like, Hagrid was just saying, I don't want it to be alone at Christmas.
Yeah, but like there's five other hippogriffs out there.
Well, he's supposed to be isolated, tethered and isolated.
Oh, okay. Again, Hagrid has some questionable judgment here. I don't think this is Hagrid's fault. I don't think it's Buckbeak's fault, but Hagrid is not dealing with this in a great way.
Yes, but he's also, and we get a inside look at why he's following this to the letter of the law, mm-hmm. of exactly how this letter says.
Yeah.
Just, he opens up about his time in Azkaban.
Yeah, and he's like, I don't want to step out of line in any way. I don't want to give them any kind of suggestion that I was going to send Buckbeak off, because I don't want to go back to Azkaban.
Yeah, he talks about how he's struggling right now every time he goes to get a drink, which it's Hagrid, probably often. He has to walk past those Dementors and they remind him of Azkaban. And he talks about all the things he sees when he's near the Dementors.
Yeah, and that, I think, could have been an interesting connection point for him and Harry. And I think that this is part of what, like, cools Harry down a little bit, of realizing, like, there are other people out there with problems. Like, you know, not everything is about me. I'm not going to blow everything up just to deal with my rage. I think that helping Hagrid kind of redirects him a little bit.
Yes.
But, I think Harry could really use somebody right now that's like, yeah, the Dementors really mess with me too, man. Like, I've got some stuff in my past that I really don't want to relive. And Hagrid actually makes an interesting comment about the Dementors and guilt, because the kids kind of say to him, like, was it that bad in Azkaban? Like, you were innocent. Was it still bad? And Hagrid says, where is it? Think that matters to them? They don't care. Long as they got a couple hundred humans stuck in there with them so they can leech all the happiness out of them, they don't give a damn who's guilty and who's not.
Yeah.
And he is. Yeah.
He's making it very clear that these are just
they're creatures. Monsters. Yeah. Yeah. They're out of control. And like we've seen that too with the Quidditch game, that like they were not supposed to be there.
They were just hungry.
Yeah. They're just so vicious that they can't resist going and feeding off of these innocent people. And, you know, not to condone Dementors at all. I don't think that guilty people should have to deal with Dementors either, given how horrifying they are. But yeah. Like they are so there's this suggestion that the Dementors are outside of anybody's control. That, like, they don't respect any kind of law and order. They just want something to feed off of.
Yes. And it seems like the only thing keeping them at bay is power.
Like, yeah.
Dumbledore has to constantly be working to keep them away from the castle.
Yeah. And that's another thing, too, that, like, or I think it's Hermione says, like, why don't you get Dumbledore involved with this and help defend Buckbeak?
Yeah. He says he's done enough because Dumbledore definitely put a lot out there to protect Hagrid.
Yeah.
And he's very busy with those Dementors.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is shocking to think that like a big part of Dumbledore's day is suddenly trying to keep these Dementors in order. That's wild.
Now, rewinding a little bit, still with Hagrid, but Hagrid talks about how he hasn't been himself lately, worried about Buckbeak and no one's liking his classes. Hermione lies to him and says, we do like them. And Ron says, yeah, they're great. How are the flubberworms?
The flubberworms are dead because they ate too much lettuce. Who gave them the lettuce?
That was like every class that they've talked about has been, oh, now we're just giving them lettuce. Now we're just poking lettuce into their mouths. Like
the children killed the flubberworms
because they were only allowed to feed them lettuce.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. What a dark thought.
Dead. Too much lettuce.
And like, listen, I don't think any of these kids are mourning the loss of the flubberworms.
No.
But imagine coming back after Christmas break and like you're that one kid that's real into Care of Magical Creatures. And you're like, oh, I can't wait to see how the flubberworms are doing. And Hagrid's just like, they're dead. You fed them too much lettuce. And also, like, how did they die from too much lettuce?
I mean, a lot of animals can die from being overfed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What? I don't know. I don't want to know how that works. I was about to ask how, but no, I mean, I don't.
Some
I don't.
Animals just don't have control. Like if you put a giant thing of food in front of an animal, some of them would eat until they are like, they won't stop when they're full. They'll just keep eating.
That sounds like me. If you put a giant plate of spaghetti in front of me, I'll keep eating that spaghetti.
Yeah. So they do leave Hagrid's hut with a new goal in mind. Harry's distracted by the desire to prove Buckbeak innocent and help Hagrid. And they go to the library, of course, and they go through a bunch of different court cases involving animals getting off and hippogriffs in general. And one that stood out to me was a manticore savage someone in
1296.
Yeah. And they let the manticore off. Oh, no, that was only because everyone was too scared to go near it.
Yeah, that's not the defense they want to use for Buckbeak. That's not the play legally.
It is not the play. So, yeah, that was the one that stood out. The other one was, oh, the hippogriff was convicted. They don't find much very helpful.
Yeah, but I think that this helps to distract Harry a little bit from the immediacy of, like, I want to go out and kill someone.
Yes.
So,
that's good. He is not currently seeking for revenge. He's seeking to protect someone in order to help his friend.
Right.
And so, then it's Christmas.
Yes, then it's Christmas. Harry wakes up on Christmas morning to Ron
throws a pillow at him.
Yeah, Ron is stuffing his face with his like peppermints or something and complaining about the sweater that his mother lovingly knitted for him and tells Harry like, hey, open up your presents, buddy.
In Ron's defense, he has explicitly said every year that he doesn't like the color maroon.
Listen, I have to assume that each of the Weasley children get a different color sweater.
Yes, and they all get the same exact color sweater,
right,
whether they like that color or not.
There are only so many colors out there.
I promise there's more than seven.
I don't know. Are there?
Yes. She's counting on her fingers.
Wait, you interrupted me. Now I can't. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple. And like, I know there are variants.
I mean, even if we're just going rainbow, indigo, violet.
Sure. Okay. All right. Yeah. But like, this is the color that was selected for you, Ron, at birth. Deal with it.
Well, either way, Harry gets a red sweater. He gets a scarlet red sweater.
He gets a scarlet red sweater with a lion on it.
Yeah. He's very happy about it.
Yeah. And then he gets another present that he's also very happy about. Kind of blows the sweater out of the water, if we're being honest. Harry receives a firebolt for Christmas. And Ron and Harry enter into some speculation about who could have sent it to him. Ron's first guess is Dumbledore.
Yeah, it has to be Dumbledore.
It has to be.
He gave you the invisibility cloak.
Yeah, and Harry rightfully is like, okay, but that belonged to my dad. Like,
yeah, he was just passing it down.
There's a difference between that and spending like thousands on a broomstick for me.
It's described as hundreds of galleons.
Okay. Still, that's a lot of money.
Although they are just guessing the price, because when they had the price on request that when they were looking at it in Diagon Alley.
I'm going to do a quick Google here and see if it's ever said how much the firebolt costs.
Okay. Ron sticks with it, though, after Harry says he can't just go buying students hundreds of galleons worth of presents. Ron says, oh, well, that's why he does it anonymously. that way Malfoy can't say anything about it.
There is nothing canonical to suggest how much the firebolt would cost. The if you go to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, they sell a firebolt for $300, but I don't think that that is helpful.
You don't think that's one for one? No.
Yeah. Let's see. This person did an inquiry. This is on Reddit.
$300 for one that doesn't fly seems like a lot.
That's a steep price. This is a Reddit thread with Reddit user Owl Post again. Ron suggests that the firebolt might be a gift from Dumbledore. Harry says that Dumbledore wouldn't spend hundreds of galleons on a firebolt for him. Assuming the firebolt is somewhere between 200 galleons and 900 galleons, that would put it somewhere between 1,000 pounds and 5,000 pounds, or about 1,200 and 6,300 US dollars, given with the current exchange rate. That's a big chunk of money to drop on a student.
Yes.
So they move on from the Dumbledore theory to Lupin.
when they start making fun of how Malfoy is going to react, they say this is an international standard broom. Mm-hmm. That stood out to me because I have no idea what that is.
I don't know either.
All right. I didn't look it up. I didn't bother to. It just seems like for it to be an international standard, it would have to be more available.
That to me suggested that like the Nimbus 2000, what are we up to? 2001 mm-hmm. is like the broom in England, and that other manufacturers around the world might have competing brooms with the Nimbus 2000. But the Firebolt is like the thing everywhere. The Firebolt is like the tippity top. That was how I understood it. I don't know if that's actually the case.
I thought it was like, this is what everything is striving to be. This is what everything's going to be judged based on.
Oh, maybe.
But it still feels weird that it's so quickly the international standard when this right. thing just came out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's that good.
Yeah. So they move on to Lupin as the theory for who got the broom. Or Ron suggests it.
Ron's coming up with some fun theories.
He is.
Lupin likes you so much. And Harry's like, I think he would buy robes first. I think he would buy robes that aren't falling apart.
But like, maybe that's the kind of guy Lupin is. He scrimps and saves. He doesn't waste his money on the things that don't matter. He wastes his money on extravagant gifts for his students.
For his favorite students.
Yeah.
And that brings up the fact that Lupin wasn't actually in the hospital wing when he was ill.
Yes.
He was not in the castle, theoretically.
Yeah. So they bring up that Harry brings up that Lupin wasn't at the Quidditch match. Like, he didn't see what happened. And Harry's like, because he was sick. And Ron's like, oh, I thought he was away because when I was serving my detention, scrubbing the bedpans, as we talked about in detail, when I was doing detention, he wasn't in the hospital wing. So, like, if he was sick, wouldn't he have been in the hospital wing?
Yes. So he might be going elsewhere to get outside care.
Yeah.
But Ron is thinking, oh, well, while he was out sick, he heard about the Nimbus and bought a Firebolt.
Yeah, why not?
Diagon Alley.
And there's something I want to bring up about the Firebolt. This doesn't come up until a little bit later, but I want to jump ahead to it because we're talking about who could have bought it. When Harry's like finding reasons to touch it and play with it. So he's like, oh, I'm going to trim the broom part. What are those called? The broom part of the broom.
The broom part.
Yeah, the broom part. He's going to like trim the twigs on it. He wants to polish the handle. It, of course, looks perfect. So yeah, he has nothing to do.
He's using Hermione's kit or considering it.
But he notes that there's a registration number on the handle of the Firebolt. So presumably, either the shop, like quality Quidditch supplies, or the manufacturer of the Firebolt, wouldn't they have records about like where each broom is because of those registration numbers or who purchased the broom?
Well, they might. It's not like you're registering this under your name. It's more of like, here's your kind of serial number of like, if they make 2000 of these things, you know which one you got. You know, if this is the first run of the Firebolt kind of
okay.
thing.
Okay. Because I'm thinking about it now. I used to work at GameStop. And when we would sell a console, for example, we would have to scan the serial number. And that was more for inventory purposes.
Yes.
Less than it was for like tracking like, oh, Joe so-and-so bought a Nintendo Switch and he has this specific one. It was more just for like our records, keeping track of like, okay, we have five Nintendo Switches and these are the serial numbers that they have. And I understand that that's important for companies because like if they have to issue a recall of some kind, like with cars,
was a problem between these dates and we know which ones were made on that
right
date.
Okay. I was just thinking that like if it has a registration number, I would imagine there's some kind of record keeping of
there is a possibility that you could call up the store and find out, you know, who may have purchased this right. specific serial number or like just when.
Yeah. So perhaps we'll circle back to that. All right. But here, where are we? So Hermione comes along with Crookshanks, much to Ron's anger.
And Hermione is just ignoring Ron as usual. Yeah. Ron's, you know, grabbing Scabbers really quickly and she just throws her cat onto an empty bed.
Hermione's a bad pet owner.
Hermione's a bad pet owner.
Yeah, but Hermione is very concerned about the Firebolt. She is not excited about it at all. And I do like that there's a moment where she asks, like, well, this is a really expensive broom, isn't it? And Ron and Harry are like, yeah, it's a really expensive broom. It's an international standard, Hermione. And like, I know Hermione is not a part of the broomstick world and is kind of trying to like talk them down a little bit. But I don't know. That moment just made me laugh. But yeah, Hermione is deeply concerned about the broomstick. She's concerned that it doesn't have any kind of note or letter indicating who it's from and that there might be something wrong with it.
Yes, she is very concerned.
Yes. And that, unfortunately, is interrupted by Crookshanks attacking Scabbers.
Yes, ripping another pair of pajamas.
Ron's PJs, yeah.
Yeah.
And interestingly, Harry's sneakoscope somehow falls out. Like Ron kicks Harry's
trunk. Ron tries to kick Crookshanks, and Crookshanks dodges out of the way. Ron just kicks the
Harry's trunk,
which like loosens the sneakoscope out of the pair of socks that he was hiding the sneakoscope in, because he was constantly making noises.
And it is now making noises, which is interesting. This is the second situation in which we've had Crookshanks and Scabbers doing something and the sneakoscope is going off.
Yes. But as far as Harry is concerned,
it just always makes noise.
Since he got to
the Leaky Cauldron,
it's been going off.
Yeah.
The whole time. That's why he put it in the sock in the first place.
Yeah.
And has it like muffled.
So is it busted? Is something more going on? No way to know.
As a reminder, the sneakoscope lets you know if something bad. Untrustworthy is nearby.
Yes. Yeah. So this argument happens between Ron and Hermione with Crookshanks and Scabbers. Harry does catch a glimpse at Scabbers and says he is not looking well. He's looking thin, patches of his fur falling out, and he is worried that Scabbers might be approaching the end of his days.
Yes, and he says that Ron always complains about him, but he would be miserable if Scabbers died.
Totally.
Ron does say that specifically it's stress that's getting to him. Mm-hmm. And Ron points out he'd be fine if Crookshanks would leave him alone.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that Ron's saying, oh, it's definitely stress, because it's stress, but...
All right, we're going to move on from that because we're approaching some dangerous territory in terms of spoilers. But they go down for Christmas lunch and find a cozy little arrangement. Because so few people have stayed for the holidays, the staff has decided to push, or it seems like Dumbledore decided to push the Great Hall tables aside and just have a little tiny table for everyone to all eat together.
Yes, so they have exactly 12 chairs set up. They did not intend for Professor Trelawney. I'm sure she RSVP'd that she was going to be staying in her room.
So I'm trying to remember. It's Dumbledore, Snape, McGonagall, Flitwick.
Sprout.
Filch. In terms of the teachers. And then obviously Harry, Ron, and Hermione. There's a fifth year and two first years,
I believe.
Yeah. And then Professor Trelawney comes down a few minutes later and she says that she saw herself abandoning her solitary luncheon and coming to join them, and that she wasn't going to defy fate, obviously.
Yes.
And I want to ask here, because this is in my brain, because I don't go when we have when the principal buys us all lunch or like there's food in the faculty room, I don't go because I feel really uncomfortable
with our current situation.
Yeah, it's mostly like the COVID thing that like I don't feel comfortable going to an enclosed space and eating communal food with people because like everybody's touching that food. People are standing around with their masks off. Like, I don't want to be a part of that. So like, I'm worried that I'm becoming the Trelawney, that now if I do go down, like when COVID's no longer an issue,
someone's going to have to conjure you a chair.
Somebody's going to have to conjure me a chair. Somebody's going to be like, oh, Cassie, decide to leave your classroom, decide to, mill about with us regular people. I'm worried about that. Am I Professor Trelawney?
I think with this being your first year, it's a tough situation.
Yeah.
I think if things are back to normal, you can theoretically start next year if it's safe.
And like, I tell people when people try to encourage me, I'm just like, I'm uncomfortable with that. And yeah, I don't know. I just, I don't want to be seen as Trelawney. And like, listen, we talked about this before. McGonagall and Trelawney have some banter here during the meal. And like, I can see why Trelawney doesn't want to come down. If this is how she's treated.
Well, who really started this, though? Because she's about
Trelawney.
To sit down.
She sits down and says all kinds of weird stuff.
No,
and
before she sits down, she's invited to a seat right next to McGonagall. And she says, oh, I shouldn't sit down because there will be 13 of us. And the first one that stands up is going to die.
Yeah. And everybody just makes fun of her.
Yeah. Well, McGonagall says like, oh, I think we'll risk it.
Yeah. And McGonagall continues to make like little jabs at Trelawney as the meal goes on. And like, I get it. Trelawney's ridiculous. But if she feels bullied by McGonagall, yeah, she's going to eat alone in her little tower.
Yeah. But like, they have a peaceful 2-hour lunch after that when she stops speaking mistily.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. Yeah, I would hate that I'm at a point in my life where I'm sympathizing with Professor Trelawney.
I would like to point out that before dinner starts, before Trelawney comes down, we get one of the crackers opened up and it's between Snape and Dumbledore. And it is a vulture wizard hat that pops out.
Yeah. So I'm a little unclear on this. Are crackers like poppers?
No. So it's kind of like, crackers? Have you ever done a wishbone?
No.
So that's like the wishbone in a turkey. You pull
yeah,
one half.
Yeah, I know,
and like
I know you, what you do with a wishbone.
Okay, but I'm telling the listeners.
Okay.
The person with the bigger half gets their wish, I guess.
Okay.
So a cracker is the same way.
Oh, like
you pull them and
yeah, what are they called? They're made out of like woven stuff and you pull it and there's like a prize in the middle. It's usually like candy or something, right?
Yeah, I don't know if they're all necessarily woven.
I'm imagining them looking like those finger
they're
traps.
They're not the finger traps. Okay. They're not finger traps.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a little prize inside.
Yeah.
That you get if you win.
And Snape wins. He
Snape
wins a hat
wins,
with
but does
a
not want that
on
hat.
It.
He pushes
no.
it over. But Dumbledore, I love Dumbledore so much, especially in these scenes where he gets to just be silly.
Mm-hmm.
He's more than happy to take his hat off and switch it out for the vulture head.
Yeah. So they all have this meal. There's some fun conversations that go on. Dumbledore is a lot of fun. But it is brought up that Lupin is sick again.
Yes. Trelawney asks that. And yes. McGonagall pokes fun at her, saying she should know it already.
Yeah. And Trelawney counters, I frequently act as though I am not possessed of the inner eye so as to not make others nervous, which I liked.
That explains a great deal.
Yeah. But Lupin is sick again. And Dumbledore is like, yeah, it's unfortunate that he has to be sick on the Christmas holidays. He asks if Snape has brewed the potion for Lupin. And Snape does say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Trelawney makes a prediction here. So she already made the prediction about like the first to rise from the table of 13 will be the first to die. And the second prediction is that Lupin will not be with them for very long and that his time is short.
Yes. But also he seems aware of it because
he knows
he runs away from her crystal ball reading.
And people make fun of Trelawney for this as well. And I want to ask, because it's a little vague, do you think she means his time is short as a teacher at Hogwarts or his time is short as in he's going to die soon?
Cassie, I'll let you know that the secret to being looked at as making accurate predictions is to make them as vague as possible.
Okay.
So that whatever happens, we can say, oh, she got it right.
Yeah. There's a scene in Cycle 2 of America's Next Top Model when Tyra calls in a psychic who does like psychic readings for the girls. And like, they're all like, man, she knew exactly like my stuff. She talked about like my background with my family and stuff. And I'm like, you're
she
on
watched
a
the show.
Reality TV show. Well, no, they film it before they air it.
Okay.
And this is like the third episode or something. You're on a reality TV show where you go through extensive interviews about like your life and who you are and your mental state.
Yeah,
they could have easily given that stuff to the psychic.
Yeah.
Anyway. Just a little connection there of similar works in the media landscape, Harry Potter and America's Next Top Model.
But Dumbledore cuts that conversation short, saying that he doubts that Professor Lupin is in immediate danger.
Yeah, he's like, Lupin's not going to die anytime soon. He's all right. So her, Trelawney then freaks out when people start getting up from the table because Ron and Harry get up together and she's like, who was first? You're going to die.
I don't know.
So we'll have to keep a lookout for Ron or Harry to die soon. Mm-hmm. And Ron and Harry head up to the common room to just like touch the firebolt some more. And McGonagall, Hermione stays and says, like, oh, I have to talk to Professor McGonagall. And Ron quips that Hermione is probably trying to see if she can take any new classes. But that is not the case.
Yes, she is ratting on Harry and Ron, or Harry specifically, for getting the firebolt.
Yes. So McGonagall comes up to the common room to take a look at the firebolt. She kind of inspects it a little and she comments that there was no note or card with it, clearly going on the same line of thought that Hermione was on of like, who sent this to you?
Yes.
And this seems a little weird to me, given that McGonagall sent Harry a Nimbus 2000 2 years ago under similar circumstances.
Yep.
There was a note with it, if I remember correctly.
But not a signed note. No signature.
Yeah,
or
just a little wink from McGonagall. So like,
which of all the people, why didn't Ron think her,
McGonagall sent you
the
another
one that
broom?
Already sent her a
yeah,
broom.
Yeah, right.
Sent him a broom.
Yeah. And I understand that, you know, circumstances right now are very different from Harry's first year to Harry's second year. Yes. That like now there's somebody after him. So I get where McGonagall is coming from, but it feels a little hypocritical to be like, somebody just sent you a broomstick with no note. Clearly, they must have a motive.
Yeah, it's a bit hypocritical, but I do get the logic behind.
Absolutely.
Oh, we have to check.
Yeah, that just struck me in that moment. Mm. So McGonagall says that they have to take the broom away from Harry to inspect it, that they're going to strip it down, which deeply offends Ron.
Yeah.
And look for any curses or enchantments.
And it shouldn't take more than a few weeks.
Yes. And Harry and Ron are outraged about it. The chapter ends here with Hermione saying that she thinks that the broom may have been sent by Sirius Black and therefore may be dangerous. Do you think that Hermione is right to do this?
I think probably.
Yeah. And I feel like a real old person for being like, Hermione's right.
I think that it's very logical to make that assumption.
Yeah.
I think it's also kind of insane to think that this man on the run spent a ton of money on a firebolt just to enchant it to make Harry fall off, which already happened. That's a thing that already happened, and he was fine.
Yeah, but I mean, if he's flying it around for fun or like during Quidditch practice when they're unsupervised, it could be bad for him.
It could be bad for him.
Yeah, but like the other thing, too, is that Hermione didn't go to McGonagall, I presume, and say Sirius Black sent Harry a firebolt. She said, Harry received a firebolt for Christmas and I'm concerned about it. McGonagall comes to her own conclusions and makes her own decisions about it.
Well, we don't know that for sure. There's a good chance she said Harry got a firebolt with no notes, and I think it might be from Sirius Black.
Okay, which is a reasonable conclusion to draw.
Sure, but it is also just, you know, leading the witness.
I guess, yeah. The other thing, too, that you brought up and that I want to talk about is that this raises some questions about Sirius Black, that if he did send this firebolt, of course, the motive is a big question mark, I guess, to hurt Harry in some way. But where would he get the money for such a gift? We don't know anything about Sirius Black's life, you know, prior to betraying Harry's parents, apparently, and joining Voldemort.
And on top of that, all of the ministry is on the lookout and definitely knows where his bank vault is in Gringotts.
Right. So where did he get the money? Both like physically, where did he get the money? Like, how did he get that money in his pocket? And like, where did that money come from? Is he from a family with money? And also, like, Sirius Black can't just walk into Quality Quidditch Supplies and be like, I'd like a firebolt, please.
Yeah.
And like, you know, presumably there's some purchase information that goes into that. Even if somehow he wasn't recognized.
Especially like you have to order that.
Yeah.
Inquire inside.
They don't just have like 10 in the back.
11 in the back. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of questions being raised by this.
Yes.
The most important being, when will Harry get his firebolt back so he can stunt on the poor other Quidditch players who can't afford such a broom?
And as Harry's thinking, what condition will it be when he gets back?
Yeah, strip it down.
Two professors are about to take it apart and do a bunch of anti-jinx things on it.
Yeah.
He does not know what it's going to look like when it comes back, if it's going to function well.
And I mean, I understand that outrage in that moment, but like, McGonagall wants him to have a good broom. You know, McGonagall is kind of like, this could be it. This could be what cinches victory for us.
She definitely wants him to win, but not as much as she wants him to still be alive.
Yeah, absolutely. But like, I would trust that McGonagall would respect the sanctity of the broom.
She's not in control of that part,
I guess. And I guess if her primary motive is safety, that she'll do whatever she needs to make sure it's safe.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I'm also sure that if she was confident it didn't have jinxes and she still took it just out of safety, you know, she would have flown it down the hallway after she was out of eyesight.
I don't know about that.
Oh,
I
yeah.
don't think.
I think McGonagall wouldn't have passed up if she was more confident that it didn't have jinxes.
Okay.
I don't think she would have passed up that opportunity to try out a firebolt.
Interesting thing about McGonagall is that, like, I think I get caught up a lot in Maggie Smith's portrayal of her because Maggie Smith does such a good job with it. But, like, McGonagall is supposed to be, like, half the age of Maggie Smith in those movies.
Well, so she taught Pettigrew and James
yeah,
and Sirius.
But that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So yeah.
She was at least a teacher.
Her like birthday or something or a timeline is on Pottermore. She's supposed to be like 50 at this point, like 40s, 50s.
Yeah. She, as far as I'm aware, she was not a professor when Hagrid was a student
no.
and the Chamber of Secrets was open.
No, because but Dumbledore was the Transfiguration
yes, exactly.
professor.
But between 50 years ago and 20 something years ago,
yeah.
She got a job as a professor.
Yeah, I'm just saying, Maggie Smith, love her, bless her heart. She's old.
She does it so well, though.
She does, absolutely. I think she's great for the role. But like, that's just a general thing with the movies that I think that our perception of a lot of characters is kind of skewed because they casted a lot of the adult characters as much older than they should have been. Like, Snape is another good example that Alan Rickman was much older than Snape is supposed to be in the books.
Yes, and they had to age up Maggie Smith, or not age up Maggie Smith, but they had to age up McGonagall even further, knowing where Snape fits in this timeline.
Okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's crazy we can't talk about that yet.
Yeah. And I mean, like, even Harry's parents, they died when they were like 21. They were very young. And yet when he sees them in the Mirror of Erised, they're old.
Mm-hmm.
Not like old, old, but, you know, like, they're adults. You know, they don't look like teenagers, which also makes me sound old. That I'm like, 21, they're teenagers. They're just kids.
That's not how teenagers work.
Yeah, but I'm old. All right. So that is kind of the chapter. And I believe that that brings us to Spell of the Week.
For Spell of the Week, we're going to be talking about chair conjuring.
Oh, boy. I was very curious about what you were going to come up with for this chapter.
This was the only spell I could actually see being cast, although we don't hear it being cast.
No,
we don't. Dumbledore is very good at non-verbal spells. There is no specific chair conjuring spell. As far as I can tell, it is.
That shocks me, given the highly specific spells we have reviewed in the past.
For the record, this does have its own page on the Harry Potter wiki, but I think that's just because that's how the wiki works.
You know how I feel about the Harry Potter wiki,
yeah.
So, you know.
This is a type of conjuration. Conjuration is essentially transfiguration, except you don't need to have something to start with. So it is creating something out of nothing.
Is that possible in the Harry Potter universe?
You can conjure things. You can't conjure food.
Oh, right. Okay. There we go.
Yes. Conjuration is looked at as some of the most complex magic that it's taught at Hogwarts. Conjuring chairs specifically, I did like the description of Dumbledore actually drawing a chair in midair with his wand. It then spins around for a few seconds before falling with a thud to the ground. So theoretically, Dumbledore could have drawn any shape chair and created it that way, which I think is fun. This does seem like how he conjures all those purple sleeping bags as well in a previous chapter.
He just draws 1,000 purple sleeping bags in the air.
Well, not the drawing of them. He kind of just like slides his wand around and they appear. There is some argument as to whether or not he created all of them, because conjuration is difficult, and especially to conjure that many things is difficult for a normal wizard, which we know Dumbledore is powerful, but it's also possible he simply essentially teleported them from somewhere else.
Yeah.
He moved them from, I guess, a storage closet.
Oh, well, we know Hogwarts Castle has many mysteries to unfold as far as rooms with things in them. So. Yes.
Although the room you're thinking of might not be easy to just teleport things out of.
Yeah. So we'll see.
We will see chair conjuration again. But as far as I can tell, it's really just conjuration in general.
Okay.
And it's never going to be shown with an actual incantation.
Okay.
Because only masters of nonverbal spells can conjure chairs.
It's one of the most advanced forms of magic,
Robert. Yeah.
All right. So is that spell of the week?
That is spell of the week.
All right. So, unfortunately, we don't have any emails this week, but you can send us an email to owlpost@podtrivicustotalis.com with your thoughts and comments and corrections. You can send us a firebolt to owlpost@podtrivicustotalis.com. We'll find a way to make that work. No problem.
If you want to buy us things.
Yeah, please, you know, send me an email. I can be bought. I'm not above that. So owlpost.podtrivicustotalis.com. Of course, you can visit our website, podtrivicustotalis.com, as well for detailed show notes to listen to our episodes. And there's a little link there to email us from there if you don't know how to send an email. A couple of matters of, not business, matters of order. The first being, I said it in our last episode, I'm going to say it again. For the month of April, podchaser.com is donating 25 cents to Meals on Wheels for every review left on their website. And they will double that donation if the podcaster replies to the review. So I promise I will reply to any review that you leave us on podchaser.com to send some money to a good cause. That is good for the entire month of April. So still time to get in, still a few weeks to drop us a nice word or a mean word. Honestly, I don't mind if you write a mean word and you're still donating money to Meals on Wheels. So go ahead and do that. And I do want to take a minute to acknowledge the passing of Helen McCroy. She played a character we have not met yet, but Mrs. Malfoy in the Harry Potter movies. She passed away a couple days ago from cancer at age 52. So
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, sorry to hear that. Both of us have family members who've been affected in some way by cancer. It's sad to see somebody go at such a young age, but she was a very accomplished actress. She did well in the Harry Potter movies and outside of it. So much love to her family and her fans at this time. And I don't know how to segue out of that, but you can join us next time for Chapter 12 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
The Patronus.